Hi, this is John Jenkins, managing editor of thecorporatecouncil.net, and I'd like to welcome you to our latest edition of the Timely Takes podcast. My guest today is Olga Uzvesky. Olga is a former VP of Research of Audit Analytics, where she led the development of new data sets used by investors, regulators, and academics, and a frequent reference tool here at the Corporate Council as well. She's also the author of the Deep Quarry newsletter, and she's here today to discuss an article that she recently wrote for the newsletter on some court staff comments on impairment charges that are pretty interesting. Olga, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Great. Hey, can you tell us, I gave a little bit of an introduction, but maybe you can provide our listeners with a little bit more about your background and your expertise.
Absolutely. I hold a master in accounting degree from Boston College, and I'm a CPA. Previously, I spent 12 years at Audit Analytics, where as a VP of research, I led a team of analysts in developing data-driven products for accounting, regulatory, and academic communities. I personally believe that accounting is about providing information to investors. And for that reason, I believe accounting is important. And I'm excited to talk about it, to write about it, and to discuss it at any possible opportunity.
Okay, now let's get down to some specifics here. Can you briefly review the impairment concept under GAAP? What kinds of assets have to be evaluated for impairment, and when and how companies have to conduct that analysis?
Yeah, absolutely. Impairment concept refers to permanent write down of company's assets. The objective of the impairment is to prevent an overstatement of the assets on the balance sheet if the value of the assets declined below their recoverable amounts. If the value of an asset falls below its fair market value and impairment loss is recorded, the reversal of the impairment is generally not allowed. Both tangible and intangible assets could be subject to the impairment testing. For instance, although the discussion of impairments often focuses on goodwill, other assets, such as tangible long-lived assets, oil and gas properties, for example, should also be tested for impairment if there is a triggering event. For indefinitely-lived intangible assets, the impairment testing needs to be performed at least annually, or more often if there is a triggering event. GAAP provides examples of triggering events, such as decline in market capitalization below the book value. It's a strong indicator of an impairment testing requirement. Other examples of triggering events include plant closures, layoffs, inability to meet forecasts, and deteriorating long-term outlooks.
Now, your newsletter piece discusses an interesting comment on impairment charges. I know that's traditionally been a topic of great interest to the staff at CorpFin, but this one was recently issued to Kraft Heinz. And I'm wondering if you can discuss what issues were raised by the staff in that comment letter and how the company responded to them.
Yeah, one interesting thing about Kraft Heinz is that more than 75% of Kraft Heinz assets are intangible assets and goodwill. And intangible assets are primarily trademarks. The SEC asked Kraft Heinz whether a decline in the share price and market cap of the company should be considered a triggering event. And as I said previously, sharp decline in market cap is one of the arguably strongest indicators of that impairment testing is required. Now, Kraft Heinz argued, citing GAAP, that market capitalization may not be representative of fair value when synergies exist. The company also argued that the decline in price was short-lived and thus is not a triggering event for impairment purposes. GAAP specifies that decline in market caps need to be sustained. And Kraft Heinz said that it was temporarily and short-lived. So that was the argument behind their response.
I take it, I've not seen that anything signed off. Is that still an open issue, Olga, or is that comment been resolved?
No. So for Kraft Heinz was able to resolve the SEC comments fairly quickly. They provided a very detailed, comprehensive response, and that probably was one of the reasons why the SEC accepted their response as is and did not issue any follow-up comments. So the issues are not outstanding, at least for now, for Kraft Heinz.
Great. Now, were those comments unusual? And you know, if you could also, in answering that, elaborate on some of the typical issues that the staff raises when they comment on impairment disclosure.
Yep. Staff comments on impairment testing, and more specifically on significant decline in market cap as a triggering event, are not uncommon. searching Audit Analytics database, Common Analytics database, identified more than 380 companies with this type of common. So it's not unusual. Now, this type of common is more prevalent during economic downturns when stock prices and market caps are declining. For instance, after the financial crisis of 2008, several large financial companies received SEC comment letters asking whether a sharp decline in market price is a triggering event for impairment testing purposes. Now, typically, when staff issues questions about impairment testing, they request more clarity around methods and assumptions used to derive fair value estimates, including uncertainty surrounding those estimates or negative events that could affect those estimates. In terms of the outcomes, typically those comments do not result in additional impairments, but companies do provide additional disclosure in subsequent filings.
Now, do you have any guidance for companies either on minimizing the risk of drawing a comment on impairment charges or disclosures, or on preparing to respond to those comments when they get them from the staff?
I personally believe that the best way to resolve SEC comments is to provide to the point tailored to company specific set of circumstances responses and site specific accounting guidance where possible and where applicable. I mean, going back to Kraft Heinz was very specific about how they evaluated declining market capitalization, and they provided very specific accounting guidance that they cited in their responses. Now, it is also always prudent to be proactive and review comments received by peer companies. I mean, while there is no one-fit-all solution, sometimes understanding peer responses and disclosures could be helpful in drafting appropriate responses to the SEC comment letters and strong disclosure in the SEC filings.
That's a great point. And I think one thing I'd highlight, we have talked about that to our listeners and our members before and advised them, hey, read the comments that your peer groups are getting. It's one very quick way to become a hero on the disclosure team, because you can give people some real advance warning of what others in your sector are getting. And again, as you point out, Olga, it's not, you know, every company is different, but you can definitely pick up on some common trends if you take the time to read the letters that they are issuing to your peer companies. I want to thank Olga for her time today. It was very informative. And at the top of today's podcast, I mentioned her online Deep Quarry newsletter. Now, I subscribe to that newsletter. It's full of data-driven insights into accounting and financial reporting issues and some thoughts on what they mean for the businesses involved, which I think is very helpful. And I think many of our listeners may be interested in subscribing to it as well. So, Olga, before we sign off, could you tell our listeners how to subscribe to your newsletter?
The newsletter is distributed through email through Substack. I'm excited to welcome any new subscribers. There is an easy subscribe button on the Substack, or if people are more, and I'm happy to add people to my subscription list upon request. As you mentioned, a lot of my insight is data-driven. I write a lot about current topics, about SEC comment letters, about new accounting pronouncements, and new regulation. And as I said, I'm always happy to talk about accounting and discuss it through my Substack, through podcasts, or in any other way.
Well, that's great. And we'll make it easy for our listeners to subscribe, because we'll include on the landing page for this podcast a link. So if you're listening to today's podcast, click on the link to the Deep Quarry Substack, and there's a subscribe button, and you can connect with Olga's newsletter. Olga, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. And thanks to everybody for listening. This concludes today's podcast.
Thank you.